listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the show. Today is Monday, November 25th. As we move in towards Thanksgiving, which is going to be on Thursday, as it always is. And I'm looking forward to that. Get a little rest and get a long weekend, Black Friday, all the events. And then leading up to Christmas, of course, and New Year's, which is a time that I really like during the year. We have a guest in the studio. I just wanted to bring up this headline and do with it what you will. But it says Macy's found a single employee hit up to $154 million worth of expenses. Now, how does someone do that? I don't know. I haven't read the article yet, but what do you know, man? It's like these things. I mean, they're saying that they had to delay their quarterly returns because of that. It screwed up their accounting completely. But at any rate, we're going to get to our guest. We're joined by Toby Cochran. Welcome to the show, Toby.
Thank you so much.
Of course. And you're a filmmaker, and we're going to talk all about it and stuff. And you made a film called Lucky and the Lights.
That's correct.
Yes. And that's an animated short, right?
It is.
And You showed me a little bit of it, and I got emotional, I have to admit, you know. So it definitely touched me there. And this deals with ALS and all that, so we're going to find out a lot about it. I'm curious. And but let's find out a little bit about you. Where were you born?
I was born in Golden, Colorado.
Golden, where is that? Like close to Denver?
Kind of. It's about 20, maybe 25 minutes west of Denver now.
Okay.
Yeah, it's about 45 minutes south of Boulder.
Okay.
So it's just kind of nestled down in a little valley there and real close to the mountains.
Yeah, so in the suburbs pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice there with the mountains and everything. I mean, Colorado is just beautiful, you know. I wish, and I told you I took a road trip there, but I really wish I had more time to go, and maybe we'll go back because now my wife wants to go there. And, you know, I remember a couple of years ago when I was thinking of moving out of L.A., I looked up, like, the best places to live in the country. And the first one that came up was Colorado Springs, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And, you know, I traveled there, and I really enjoyed it. You know, I mean, there's a lot of nature, mm-hmm. rocks and mountains and even a lake. Small lake that I saw there.
Yeah, there's a great hiking trail and bit of a mountain range called Garden of the Gods down in Colorado Springs.
Right.
And then there's, I think it's called Stairway to Heaven. It's about a mile just straight up.
Yeah, it's like something peak. I just can't remember what it is, but something with peak. And yeah, that's pretty high out up there and stuff.
Yeah.
But the Garden of the Gods is really interesting there to see, because you have like rocks that were shaped by the winds and, you know, and
stuff. All the water millions of years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, so it's really nice. And
did you get a chance to check out Red Rocks?
No, I did not, actually.
Okay. Yeah.
Is that in the area there too?
It's kind of near Golden a little bit, down towards Littleton.
Okay.
And it's where the famous Red Rocks Amphitheater is,
mm-hmm.
where a lot of musicians go. But there's a really nice, small, like, hiking trail and stuff like that.
Okay.
Kind of similar to Garden of the Gods. Really beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very nice. You know, I just remember I actually heard of Golden, that was the place where they brew Coors.
That's right.
Beer, right?
Everybody recognizes Golden for Coors beer.
Because they would say that in the commercial, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And,
home of the Rockies, and beer's cold if the mountains
in Colorado, are cold. Yeah. I mean, in Golden, Colorado and stuff. So, yeah, that was some time ago. It's not in their latest advertising, but...
yeah, and, you know, I've never... They used to offer tours there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and every... Like, friends years and years ago that would come through always wanted to get a tour there.
Uh-huh.
And I would tell them about it, but I had never actually been myself.
Yeah.
But, you know.
That's interesting, because Anheuser-Busch have a brewery here, and... And they had like Busch Gardens. I mean, they had like a little fair, you know.
Okay.
A permanent fair that people would go to, like a fun park. And so that's interesting that they do that, you know, with beer companies, you know, catering to families. I don't know.
Yeah, it was a very family-oriented company. I had some friends in high school whose parents worked there and things like that for a long, long time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. And do you have any siblings?
I have a younger sister, yes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. She's still in Colorado.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. She's out there holding it down. Years ago, my parents moved back to their hometown in Kansas. Mm. So it's only my sister and my cousins up in Loveland, Colorado.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what made her move to Colorado?
I think just opportunity. My mom had an opportunity in early 80s mm-hmm. with some work. And then my dad was just, you know, down to support her and kind of follow along. And they just were kind of like the country bumpkins, if you will, going out to the big city.
Because
they grew up in a town where I think at the time it was maybe 2,000 people.
Really?
The town's a mile long. So when we go back to visit, there's not a whole lot to do. And my wife, she was like, what are we doing today? Well, I was like, well, we could walk the whole town. But they were high school sweethearts. Uh-huh. I think they had maybe 24 people in their senior class.
Wow.
So it was super small. They knew everybody, obviously. And then they moved out to Colorado in the early 80s.
Right.
Got married when they were 19, waited 10 years to have me, and you know, just
very cool.
Yeah, had a lot of fun.
And you had a nice childhood there in Colorado.
I did, yeah. Yeah, it was great. Like you were saying, I miss the seasons in Colorado. Mm-hmm. I loved snow days. Used to walk to school, that sort of thing. So it was always a kind of an adventure, especially during the winter and things like that. But you know, I live pretty close, so it was an easy walk.
Yeah. I know it does get snow, but it's much milder than the northern states. I mean, you get some, you know, and that, but you get a nice summer there as well.
Yeah, the last big blizzard, I mean, when I was there, was probably senior year in 2003. There was like 6 foot of snow had just dumped.
Really?
And I had my buddies over, and we just played Xbox.
Yeah.
Like for the whole like next 2 days, and then we went sledding down our main road and stuff like that because everything was closed down.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. And I miss being able to like kind of get out into nature and have it be so accessible. Obviously, there's beautiful places here.
There are, but it's farther out there because we're so big.
Yeah.
In L.A., you know, just a big county. But there are places to go in California. Just that I've been to most of them. So, you know, I like to go farther out. But when you drive the car, you can't go that far when you want to take a weekend or something.
Right,
you know?
Right.
You go, the farthest you go maybe is Vegas or something, you know, so you can spend a couple of days and come back, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we do have nature, and that's the great thing about Southern California is we have ocean, we have mountains, we have desert, we have anything that you can think of.
A little of everything out here.
Right. Yeah. So it's nice, you know. Yeah. We talked about the weather earlier.
Yeah, you can't. We pay the taxes for the weather out here.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Say whatever you will about California, but the weather, you can't beat that.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
And that's why so many people come here, you know, and then that makes everything expensive.
Exactly.
Because there's such a big demand.
Yeah.
And I think we have about 4 million people now in L.A. County alone, you know, so.
It's quite a few.
It's quite a bit, yeah. But the city's spread out, which is nice in one way because it's not congested mm-hmm. as far as, you know, where you live and where you go and stuff like that. But the freeways are. The freeways are very busy. But here the challenge is the distances, really, mm-hmm. you know, because, you know, traffic gets heavy in many cities. But the drive is only 10, 15 minutes because it's not that far.
Yeah.
Here you have to drive an hour and a half or something, you know?
Yeah, just to go like, you know, two or three miles.
Yeah, 3 miles,
yeah. We lived in in San Francisco in Lower Pacific Heights, and just to get out of the city during, you know, middle of traffic, we'd probably go maybe 2 miles just to get up on the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
It would take us minimum 45 minutes.
Really?
Just on a regular day just to get out of there. But during the pandemic, we had to go, you know, drive around and figure out, like, you know, got to find a Costco and that sort of thing. So we got out of the city, but it literally took us 12 minutes to get out. And I was just like, oh, my God, this is what we're missing out on.
Yeah, there you go. Awesome. So then you grew up. Did you go to college?
Yeah, I went to an art institute in Colorado. Mm-hmm. So originally I wanted to go to a school out here called CalArts, which was started by Walt Disney back in the day.
Right.
And once my family, we figured out how expensive it was, my parents were like, look, kid, we didn't really save any money for you. You're on your own. So you just got to do what you got to do with what you got out here. So I started looking into different schools in Colorado, and I just started going crazy with entering scholarships. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate enough to win two large scholarships to go to the Art Institute.
Oh, wow.
They were giving out two scholarships. I think it was around, one was 15,000, if memory serves me correctly. So they're giving out two for the whole state. Mm. And I ended up meeting the other gentleman, and we became, you know, best friends in college, because when he won the other award,
right.
But when he was given a certificate, it had my name on there.
Really?
So when he got to school, he was just like, who the hell is this Toby guy? I'm going to find him. I'm going to be a better artist than him. And it turns out we ended up becoming best friends. So
whoa.
It's kind of funny.
Did you get his?
No, I got mine. Mine was regular.
So they just did your name twice.
They just screwed up.
Yeah. Wow. But that's a big deal. I mean, two out of like the whole state.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
What do you think impressed them about you? Were you promising out of high school?
I like to think so. I just had this kind of determination and tenacity that I feel like I've always kept with me for my portfolio back in high school. I was actually, I joined the wrestling team, and it was junior year I started wrestling, because I used to play basketball forever, but I wanted to try something different.
Right.
And junior year, I just got my ass whooped a ton. I was like 4-20. And then senior year, I was like, okay, I'm going to be captain, and I'm going to go to state. That was kind of my goal. So I went to summer camps and winter camps and stuff like that. But going into winter break, I ended up getting slammed.
Mm-hmm.
And I screwed up my shoulder and my left wrist, and I'm right-handed. And by the time I recovered, I was supposed to go back to a tournament, you know, sometime in January. And the weekend I was supposed to go to the tournament, there was the competition for the art school scholarship. So I opted out not going to the tournament, and, you know, pissed off my coach.
Yeah.
But then I went to the scholarship thing, and I ended up winning. Mm. So I kind of just took that as a sign, right, from the universe, God, that, okay, this is where I need to be.
Right.
And then so then once that kind of happened, the last half of my senior year, I just went like full tilt on, you know, building out a portfolio and things like that. And I actually had another school, the Rocky Mountain College of Art and Design,
mm-hmm,
very interested in me. They offered me a full ride for animation, but they wanted me to double major in graphic design. And I was like, yeah, there's no way I want to do that.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know, I've done both, actually, and I'll talk a little bit about that, but when we get to the animation. But so you realized you want to study art. Did you know specifically that you wanted to do animation, or?
No, not really. I mean, when Pixar's movies were coming out in the early 2000s, I was loving those.
The shorts that they did? Tin Toy and...
Yeah, the shorts, Alien Song, or not Alien Song, sorry, that was from an animator at Pixar.
Right.
What's the one called? Yeah. Boundin', with Bud Lucky.
Right.
But watching Finding Nemo and Monsters, Inc., I was like, oh, this could be, like, really cool.
Right.
And seeing some of the behind-the-scenes back on VHS back in the day. But I think for a long time, I always wanted to be a comic book artist, because I was always drawing, according to my parents, like 2 or 3 years of age.
Wow.
And then in school, I would draw so much, I would get in trouble. So first, second, you know, third grade, parent-teacher conferences, my parents are always being called in and like, look, your kid's got to stop. Like, I would draw Ninja Turtles on all my homework, whatever, you know, the characters would be about, you know, be a paper about Washington, but I'd draw him like a Ninja Turtle or whatever it may be. And they're like, you know, there's not a future in this. He needs to stop this. And I just kept going.
Do they know, you know,
yeah,
that later
yeah.
on you develop that talent, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You become big, you know, but I guess that happens with when you're younger, you know, the teachers and the parents want you to focus more on practical things.
Yeah.
But that's cool. So you wanted to do comic books and stuff.
I did, yeah. I was big into X-Men and Spider-Man and all that stuff back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
We'd go to garage sales with my grandpa, and we'd find, you know, just bins of old comic books and go through those and that sort of thing. And I would just spend hours drawing from the comic books and, you know, the trading cards and that sort of thing.
Yeah. That's funny, because I used to do that too. I'd draw Superman and Batman all the time, you know, and try to perfect it and everything. Mm-hmm. And I haven't really developed that talent as I grew up or as I got older. But it's funny, because I used to like to draw too. It kind of makes you bring those characters alive mm-hmm. when you want to create something that you're seeing and you feel you can create the same thing, you know?
Absolutely.
Wow, very yeah. cool.
And during the kind of suiting, if you will, the Art Institute was courting me to come to their school. Mm-hmm. I went on a little of a tour there, and there was a gentleman, Todd DeBersini, that was giving a workshop mm-hmm. class, and he was showing everybody taking their 2D drawings on right. paper at the time and then putting them in this machine, and then they would go and watch them right afterwards. And once I saw that, everything started to click for me. I was just like, oh, yeah. I can take individual drawings, and if we put them together, it actually creates the animation, and it can breathe life into these characters, this moment.
Right.
And for whatever reason, I had never, you know, really investigated or looked into it more so. And I hear stories of, you know, like Brad Bird or these other, you know, famous directors where their parents, like, got really interested in what they're doing and helped them kind of figure things out earlier. My parents, they were very supportive of just like, oh, you want to do art? You want to do this? Just like, go for it. Wow, and just like kind of let me figure things out.
Yeah, you're very fortunate in that way. Yeah. You know? Some parents don't really encourage that. And
yeah.
Unfortunately and stuff. So so you became, now did you, I mean, you directed this film in addition to everything else that you did. Did you think of directing too at the time, or did that come later on?
Yeah, you know, in college, I started my company in 2006, mm-hmm. Before I left college.
Okay.
And during my time there, I quickly realized that school wasn't necessarily going to be the exact place that would be giving me all the tools that I needed. There was a lot of great instructors at the school, but the school itself was not very good. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that can be a testament to like a lot of schools and wherever a student goes. So it's up to the student to just like do the extra effort, put in more work.
Right.
And during that time, I realized that if I wanted to try and make it or go to the big studio and things like that, I needed to reach outside of, you know, just the instructors and the students in the school and find other mentors that way. And I was fortunate enough to have a mentor help me with my business early on. So
what was your company called? What did you
call it? It's still called Big Grin.
Big Grin?
Yeah, Big Grin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so simple mission statement, put big old grins on everybody's faces.
Yeah.
The work we
yeah.
create. And in 2006, I started working with school districts in the Denver metro area as a way. One of my ideas was we were working with the No Child Left Behind bill with George Bush back then, and they just needed to show an improvement, like a 1% increase in math or science and reading back then. So I was like, well, what if we took animation and art, did something like we projected it up on the screen, had the kids in the classroom interact with you know, the characters on screen, mm-hmm. got them up, changing their physiology. There's a greater, you know, learning retention that way, that sort of thing. But back then there was only like one company making a smart board technology. Mm-hmm. So it was a little bit way before its time, but that led to like doing a commercial, doing other things in the Denver metro area, and I just started like picking up a bunch of freelance.
I see.
Yeah.
And you learned all that where, on your own pretty much?
Yeah, or? Just on my own, just kind of fire by trial. And,
right.
and
did you try start with 2D, or did you go directly to 3D?
Yeah, I originally all started 2D, even okay. though I was kind of learning 3D. I hated 3D. It took me a long time to
really?
Kind of get used to it.
Right.
I just love drawing, you know. It's just like
yeah,
there's
yeah.
something very tactile. Like, you know, I can make that mark on the piece of paper. If I mess up, I can, you know, erase it or just start on a new page.
Right. Except it's very intense, work intensive.
It is.
Because you have to create all the in-betweens and all that
Absolutely.
Stuff. Wow. And you did all that yourself?
In the beginning, certain projects I would, but very early on I learned to kind of manage teams, and you know, I feel very fortunate to have played sports growing up, and mm-hmm. I relate filmmaking and making animation. It's very much a team sport.
Yeah.
So being a point guard in basketball, you know, kind of there's some crossover in terms of like some leadership skill sets, but having a team and putting them together very early on was kind of my strength.
Yeah. Wow, that's pretty cool. And where did you find the people, like in school?
Yeah, from school. So it was just like the best of the best of in school. And if I liked what they were doing and if they were good people, it was kind of an easy setup, and learning how to write the contracts and pay them and do payroll and all of that kind of stuff was very early.
So you get started with commercials and things like that, right?
Yeah.
Did you do any short films with 2D at all?
I did. Right at the end of school, my buddies and I, we created an animated 3D short film as a way to teach ourselves animation. Okay. And there was no classes like specifically for character animation or short films.
Right.
But we knew from going to different conferences, a lot of schools would have a short film like CalArts and things like that. So we're like, oh, we need to do this. And the way that we were set up was at school was these semesters, and they were about 11 weeks. And we still had four or five other classes. So we did a whole three and a half minute short film in 11 weeks.
Really?
And it was hell. But it was such great learning because of that. And we were the only three people to kind of do that in, you know, a couple, two and a half years to actually, like, complete something. Because a lot of students get really ambitious to start something, but nobody ever finishes. So we actually finished it.
That's pretty cool, you know. And so you learned the 3D animation on your own pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Back in the day, we would have to go and buy these big old manual books, and I would go through the books, and, you know, there was no YouTube or anything like that. So. Right.
You were using things like 3D Max and...
3D Max, yep. Started at 3D Max, Softimage, eventually Maya. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Softimage doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, not anymore.
Like Alias. Alias was there too. And the reason I know all this is because I was in 3D animation very early on, you know? Okay. I mean, those tools didn't even exist yet. So I bought a Mac, and first of all, the way it all started is I didn't realize really... I could get into animation, but then Autodesk came out with a 2D package called Animator or something, and that was 2D, you know, but you learned about in-betweens and all this stuff, and so then I thought, wow, you know, this is cool, but let me see what else I can do, you know, because there's things I wanted to do like moving with a train or something, you know, and I thought... In 2D, it's impossible to do, you know. It would take way too long. So I started getting to the software that was out there. There wasn't much. I'm trying to remember what we used for modeling.
Was it Lightwave?
No, it didn't even exist yet.
Okay.
Yeah, Lightwave came out a little bit later on the Amiga, right?
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. And so that wasn't even on the Mac or PC. But even before that, I'm talking about 1990.
Okay, so...
Okay, yeah. And that was the time where Photoshop came out.
Right.
Originally. So when I started working, there wasn't Photoshop yet, so all the editing you had to do for photos was very rudimentary, you know? There was some packages and stuff that came with the scanners and all that, you know? But nothing really serious, you know? And then there was some software, I can't remember the name of it. It wasn't creating realistic stuff, but it was good enough, like, to do 3D that was not just wireframe. I mean, it was shaded and everything with lights. And you could learn from that how to do things. Then I went to – I know I'm a little focused on me, but only a few minutes.
No, it's all good.
Because it's related to that. And I want people to know why I was so attracted to your film and to talk to you and everything, because it's somehow you talk to someone about things – that you know and they know, and you can kind of bond that way, you know?
Absolutely.
But so I went out there, and I went to a convention, and there was a package there. So they were showing some new stuff in animation. And I found this company called Electric Image, and they created software where you can create things like in the movies, you know, with reflections and all that stuff for like, they were going to sell it for 10 grand. I got a beta version for 5 grand, but that was a big deal, you know? For me to spend $5,000 on software back in 1990.
Plus the equipment for just running.
The equipment and stuff, you know? Yeah. So it was running on a Max like the one I had, but back then, believe it or not, it would take like an other software, it would take an hour to do one frame, to render one frame, you know, in like ray tracing and things like that, right? Oh, yeah. In their program, you could you could render those frames about a minute or two per frame, and they came out looking the same. You know, they were not using ray tracing; they were using some other like Phong shading and stuff like that. And I thought, wow, you know, I'm creating stuff here that I see, like I see in the movies. You know, I thought maybe I should make a business out of this. So I learned more and more about it on my own, and I thought, how can I make a business out of it? And I realized I can go to companies and show the products and make it like explode and show the different parts and do a fly through around it and stuff. And that's what I did, you know, and I got customers that were really interested in it. They were really impressed by the stuff. They're like, wow, you know, we can have stuff like in the movies to promote our product, you know. So I opened the company, and then I started getting some clients that were doing actually movies and stuff like that, and I did small parts there, you know, like not A-list movies, but you know, I mean, stuff,
some smaller stuff,
yeah.
And were you doing all the work yourself, or
all
were you
the work myself? I was doing it all myself. And what I'm trying to tell you is, you know, with frames, I mean, even. Well, 2 minutes a frame wasn't too bad, but still, you need 30 frames a second, so that takes time.
Yeah.
But the thing was is that at the time, you couldn't move video fast enough on the computers in real time like you can now. Mm-hmm. Now we can do it even on phones. Back then, you couldn't move video fast enough, so we had to do frame by frame. You got like a $30,000 machine, a Sony Betacam. And it would lay the frames one at a time. The software would make it pre-roll. It runs, bam, it would lay the frames. That's how we did this. Can you imagine how long it took?
Forever,
you know? And then sometimes, so I let it run at night. Sometimes I'd come in the morning, and it screwed up everything. I'm like, oh, my God, the client is coming, and I don't even have it ready.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So that made it kind of difficult for me because the tools were rudimentary compared to what you started with and what we have now. You know, I mean, they're a lot more complicated now, for sure, because you can do character animation and all that stuff.
Yeah, you can do so much now. It's,
and in real time, you know, and get a lot of very quality stuff. But back then, it wasn't, you know, it was just, like, very difficult. You know?
And were you, back then, working with, like, the vectors and trying to pretty much just like algorithm style setting up.
You know, right. I didn't have to do that though.
Okay.
Yeah. It was all.
It had a visual component.
Yeah. Editor. It was all like, graphic like now.
Okay.
I didn't have to write any code or anything like that. But there was software out there for everything I needed. So I got that. And the rest is history. You know, then it started growing and growing and growing. I sold the company because I found something else to do, and I sort of got burned out because of all the frustration that I was getting.
I bet.
You know. So
it makes your hair go
it
gray,
really does,
real
you
quick.
Know. Yeah. But I always stayed with it. You know, I even contacted Pixar, and they were doing only shorts like to show what 3D animation is like. And I drove down to Irvine and sat with a guy, and he showed me all this stuff, and they created RenderMan, which was like, four Macs and stuff like that to create Pixar-like animation.
Mm-hmm.
But that would take forever, too. I mean, that took way too long. But,
code.
Yeah, so I got really involved in this, and then I saw over the years how it developed and everything. And today, my God, you know, you can do some amazing things. But when you started in 2006, did you say?
Originally around 2003.
Yeah, okay.
But we were still drawn. I was drawn on paper, and then I went to Flash.
Right.
And I used Flash for a very long time, and then that went into another 2D software, and I'm blanking on the name right now. But then that rolled into 3D, like 3DS Max and others.
So you taught yourself pretty much, right? You didn't need a school for that.
No, like if I – and I'm the type of personality that if I was – to be young and be going through school like that right now, mm-hmm. I would just do YouTube University.
Yeah.
I would select certain classes from, there's so many instructors and people in the industry teaching now on these great different sites.
Wow.
I would just go and do that and then teach myself online. But for some, you know, I think it is beneficial to go and have that structure and have deadlines and things like that.
Right. Cool. And you stayed in Colorado all this time, right?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. My goal was always to go out to California at some point. That short film, I turned that kind of into an idea to make it into a cartoon show. And then around then, I connected with this woman who had moved from L.A. That was at Warner Brothers working in the home DVD kind of collection series. And she had an idea for a direct-to-DVD movie back then. So I was doing character designs for her. Then I initially pitched her my short film idea, and that turned into a series. And then so from 2006 to 2007 to 2011, I was pitching people here in L.A. A series idea that turned into a feature film, and then back to a DVD to a feature film. So back and forth.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so I kind of went big at the very beginning, and then at the same time I was also freelancing, and then I started picking up work. I was working at a video game company in near Boulder at a company working on a Lego video game.
Okay.
Yeah, so I would do that during the day, and in the morning I would work on my project, and then in the evening after I get off work I would work on that until like 8 until 1 in the morning.
Yeah.
And then I would just go do the day job.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very cool. And working on games is fun too, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I actually moved. You see, that's one thing I forgot to tell you, is after I closed my company, I applied at a video game company, but they were in Vegas. They were called Westwood Studios at the time.
Okay.
Then they got bought up by Epic, one of those. And and they were not doing 3D animation yet. They had great 2D animators and stuff. So they brought me in to sort of like visualize what they could do in 3D and stuff. So I was there for a while. Then I moved to other things. But I wanted to just share that being part of the video game industry is very cool.
Very cool. And it's big today. I mean, all of the creative industries at the moment are kind of hemorrhaging. But, there's some really fun games out there. A lot of indie kind of studios doing some great stuff as
well. And very realistic stuff today.
Oh yeah, it's
right. Like, I mean, you can't even tell.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't tell. It's not live. Yeah. So let's get to Lucky and the Lights. How did that come about for you?
Sure. Yeah. So in 2017, I kind of revamped my company and started building back up my brand a little bit and started working with clients. We're service vendor studio. And my goal was, if we were going to make content or anything for children and family, I just want to be very intentional with the work that we're going to be putting out into the world, just knowing how impactful it can be. So from 2017 to 2021 is we're kind of getting our reps in, if you will, working with different clients. And then this couple in the Netherlands, Sasha and Anjo, found my company through a friend of a friend. We were recommended, and it just happened their mission aligned with my company's mission. Because about 6.5 years ago, Anjo was diagnosed with the disease ALS, also known as MND or motor neuron disease around the world. Over here, we call it, Lou Gehrig's disease
right.
And back, 3-4 years ago, they had no idea how to explain it to their children at the time, both of which were under the age of 10. And so Sasha, being an illustrator and a teacher kind of by trade, started drawing this fun robot character. And it had giant light bulbs in the joints, and then as Anjo's wrist or elbow and things like that would go out, the kids could kind of fill in the light bulbs on the paper and follow along with daddy's diagnosis pretty much. And she started blogging. It became very popular over there, and somebody gave him the idea to make an animated film. And then that that friend of a friend had recommended my company, and that was in early February of 2021. And at the same time, they had reached out to this woman, Dr. Melinda Kovna, and she had created a comic book here in the States. It wasn't, translated to Dutch or anything like that. There wasn't, for Sasha and Anjo, they were trying to remedy the fact that there was no materials for children, and thus, Lucky kind of came about. So they reached out to her asking if she would be part of the short film idea that they had. They found me, and then we kind of all teamed up to kick off the project at that point. But they'd started with a really rough outline. They came to me with that. It was like 20 minutes long. They're like, hey, we want to make a 20-minute long Pixar-level animated short film. And I said, great. What's your budget? Because doing that stuff is very expensive. And they had no idea. So my producer, Adrian, and I had to educate them. And for me, I remembered ALS mainly because of the ice bucket challenge. But I remember when I was about to participate in it, I was like, I don't know what I'm actually doing this for. Like, I don't know what it's, what like the main cause is for, or where this money's going and things right. like that.
Yeah.
And my producer, Adrian, his grandfather actually passed away from ALS. So he had a direct connection, and hearing his story and then learning more about Sasha and Anya, I was just like, oh my God, like this story, you know, this needs to get out into the world because it's going to impact so many people.
Right. So so where did they get the budget for this?
So they did a lot of fundraising over in the Netherlands by themselves.
Oh, okay.
And that kind of kicked off allowing, you know, us at Biggren to do the initial character designs, the visual development for the world. And then we did an animatic, putting storyboards together for them. And something that I agreed to, which was difficult, but I wanted to earn their trust, was I would take their original outline and I would storyboard that with the team. And I think the very first version was like 17 minutes, and it was not good. It wasn't very good. But they, when they saw that, they're like, oh, my God, we just want that. And
nice.
And then Adrian and I had to do extra kind of legwork to, you know, hold their hand and lead them to like, okay, this is why this isn't good, but we can make it better, and this is our foundation. Because obviously, you know, being from animation and story, story is king, and we want to make sure that the audiences are actually going to care for this character.
Right. So as far as what the film's going to be about, like the screenplay, who did that? Was that,
that
you?
That was me.
I see.
So
okay.
I wrote the screenplay. I wore a lot of hats on this.
Yeah.
I wrote the screenplay. I was editor. I was art director. I did a little bit of the CG supervision until I could actually bring in guys that were way better than me and way more experienced. I got to help a little bit on the animation side of stuff. I would jump in a little bit if I needed to tweak a camera during layout. But this was the very first project where I wasn't actually doing animation myself or doing the layout and things like that, because I knew the quality level that I wanted on this, and we needed to be punching way above our you know, our weight class, if you will.
It's great that you realize that, you know? I mean, that you you realize that you probably do better if you directed and managed all this stuff rather than sit there and actually do the
exactly.
The
and I just didn't have time to be doing things myself. And then also,
right.
I wanted to work with new people where they were, you know, the best of the best at what they were doing.
Right.
And because of that, we all, you know, everybody brought their A game.
Yeah. So what is the story about? Tell us briefly. How long is the film?
The film is 10 minutes and 40 seconds.
Okay.
Yeah, and it took us nearly 3 years to make.
Yeah.
And the story is about Lukey, this charming, lovable robot, just living his best life until one day he's diagnosed with the disease ALS. And then the rest of the story follows how he decides to live out life on his terms, making the most out of the situation.
Right.
And really what I want people to take away from this film is, you know, it's a, even though it's a robot character, it's about the human spirit and the condition of, no matter what we kind of deal with or what we're faced in life, we can make a decision to live out the rest of our life on the best of our terms.
Right.
In making the most out of every little moment.
Yeah, yeah. Very good. And I see you're considered for the Oscars. Wow.
Yeah, so we're on the long list right now. So we are, you know, up there with, I think, 100 other short films.
Animated films? Or?
All animated, that's
okay.
Right. So when we first met Anyo, he, like a good client, had his list of demands, and he wanted the film to be medically accurate.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted it to be educational. He wanted it to be entertaining. He wanted it to have no known language, and
mm-hmm.
he wanted it to be universal so it could play anywhere in the world. And then the very last request that he had, which was the crazy one, is he wanted it to be Oscar-worthy.
Yeah.
Because for him, from the Netherlands and seeing the Oscars and, you know, the big red carpet, he's like, how cool would it be for me to be in my wheelchair and be there to represent the film and help raise further awareness and things like
that?
That's
true, yeah.
Yeah, and now fast forward, here we are for the potential, and, you know, the shortlist announcement comes up in a couple weeks, so the voting begins in, I think, 2 weeks and things like that. So we're just trying to get out there and promote the film,
mm-hmm.
and also it's been amazing to be, I'm just very grateful to be at this point, to be helping kind of shepherd and honor Anyo's legacy through this as well.
Right. Awesome. So let's talk a little bit about ALS. You brought some notes that you want to talk about. Tell us a little bit about the disease. I mean, is it pretty common? I mean,
It is not a. It's becoming more common than people I think realize. Mm-hmm. It's definitely one of the most underfunded diseases out there. We were very fortunate to team up with Dr. Melinda Kovanoff, who I mentioned earlier. She was our medical expert advisor on the project. So she brought a lot of extra information because I would do a lot of research. I would talk to Anyo. I would listen to podcasts from people that were diagnosed with this disease. But she brought, you know, the science, and also she'd been a social worker for 25 plus years of that real experience in working with, you know, families and children who were affected by this disease. Right. So the moment I actually showed you before we hopped on, mm-hmm. Lukey spends the whole day at the doctor's office being tested, mm-hmm. and then he comes home and he's really upset and he's frustrated, right, and he tears up that brochure. Mm. That moment was a moment that Sasha and Anya, that was never in a film, but it was something that right. I wrote in, and they didn't want to have it in the film because it was a little bit more aggressive and over the top originally. Mm-hmm. But thankfully, because of Melinda, she said this moment allows the audience and specifically the kids to honor their emotions, mm-hmm. and it makes it okay to be upset, to be angry, because right. a lot of people when they're diagnosed they have no idea what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
And you know, there are programs that are getting better about that, but now you know, the film is owned by Global Neuro Eye Care, which was founded by Dr. Melinda Kovanoff, and it's the world's only global nonprofit focused on supporting and educating children, youth, and families affected by any neurological disorders. And as I mentioned, Dr. Melinda Kovanoff was a social worker. She's an expert with 25 plus years. And Global Neuro Eye Care offers a unique mix of additional programs and resources mm-hmm. worldwide. So that comic book I mentioned that she originally created, I think, it's been translated into 10 plus languages, and they're going on even more. Mm-hmm. She has additional educational material. We've helped them create kind of this book, if you will, this activity book that goes along with the film. Mm-hmm. So any families or children that are struggling with this and want to use the film as an educational component can download all the materials on her site for free mm. and then use that to help educate themselves.
Amazing. And yeah. where can people go to find that?
Yeah, they can go to globalneuroycare.org and look that up. If you type in, you know, if you Google Lukey and the Lights, you'll find Global Neuro Eye Care as well.
Great.
And then we were fortunate to have the ALS Association team up with Global Neuro Eye Care to support us, so people can go there to look for additional resources
right.
as well.
And Lukey is spelled L-U-K-I.
That's correct,
in
yeah.
case you guys want to know. Very fascinating. Let me ask you this. How do people actually get ALS? Because you're not born with it, right?
Yeah, that's something that they actually are still trying to figure out. They're,
really?
You know, doctors, yeah, they still don't know.
They don't know how?
They don't know how. There is a familial kind of gene that mm-hmm. people can be tested for. So if anybody has family members that have had ALS and things like that, and it's been kind of like passed down, whoa. You can get tested now to see if you know, that individual has the potential of having that gene. But still to this day, like there's not a lot of, there's so many unknowns about it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that seeing the potential of Lukey is now these foundations have this mascot and can use Lukey to help promote and bring further awareness about this disease and hopefully, you know, allow them to find additional resources and funding and things like that. Because all these great organizations are kind of focused on different things. You know, there's the Steve Gleason Foundation, there's ALS TDI, they're focused heavily in research and things like that. You know, Global Neuro Eye Care is focusing and providing on educational and helping, you know, children and youth and things like that.
Right.
Having these sort of resources and things of that nature. So there's so much work to still be done. And from my perspective, all the foundations, they need another big thing like the Ice Bucket Challenge to help just boost additional research and development and things like that.
Right. You mentioned that before. What's the Ice Bucket Challenge?
Yeah. So the Ice Bucket Challenge was in 2014 now, so it's over 10 years ago.
Right.
And that was kind of the first like viral thing that happened back in the day on, I think, Facebook.
I remember. So it went viral. And yeah. Everybody
people
was
were
doing,
pouring
right?
ice on themselves and cold water and things like that. And that was that was the moment that actually caused Facebook to start integrating their donation button and things like that on the platform, because before there was no donation on there.
Right.
But that kind of took, you know, spread like wildfire a little bit, because the celebrities and other people got involved. And then what made it kind of fun, I think, was that you would tag somebody. It's just like, oh, I'm gonna shout out these three people's names, and you know, somebody says Obama and Oprah and The Rock or whoever, right? And then those people go and do this sort of thing. And it was kind of, I think, an easy, natural thing to kind of go and do, and then also just share and spread.
And how did they connect that with ALS?
Yeah, so that originally started, I believe it was through ALS TDI and people that had, you know, were diagnosed with the disease. And then people just wanted to support the cause, and it just kind of just grew from there. And it just kind of became its own, you know, life
form. Nobody
knows
who started it, though, right?
I think
the first one that actually did this.
Yeah, I should probably know this. I know when I researched 3 years ago, I have it in my list of notes, but I think a quick Google search would fix that.
Probably, yeah. Wow, that's amazing stuff, man. I'm telling you, it's like, it's quite a challenge, you know, to get something like this in your life. You can be like a totally healthy person, right?
Yeah.
And then it happens one day.
Yeah.
You feel like, what is it? Your body starts.
Yeah,
to...
kind of. It from the little research, and again, I'm no expert about this. It can start either kind of in your limbs, in like your fingers, your toes, and things like that, or bulbar in kind of like the spinal cord in the back, and that one is a little bit more aggressive. And from what I understand, is it could start like, you know, people's throats start to close up and things like that. So that process, from the people that I've met, and contrast to Anyo, his started in his fingers. Like, he couldn't clip his bike helmet, and he was just having a hard time kind of grasping things that way. And then for others, it starts in their throat. And for those that start, it starts there. It becomes a lot more rapid in terms of, you know, their diagnosis, and can take their life from anywhere from, you know, 6 months to a year, or Anya lived with it for about 6.5 years. And some people, this woman, we went on her podcast, Lori Carey, she has lived with ALS for about 20 years now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. But does it usually kill you?
Absolutely. Yeah. There is only one outcome from this disease at the moment, right? And there is no cure at this stage. But I believe, again, this is a personal opinion, I believe that this disease can be cured. It's just underfunded.
Yeah,
I just think that the more research and the funding and accessibility that these nonprofits and these organizations and things like that can find, they will be able to find a cure one day.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how can people donate if they want to?
Yeah, right now, so we are fundraising through Global Neuro White Care. You can go there. There's multiple options to go in and check out and donate. It's, you know, a 501c3, so you can get your tax write-off as well, so that's great. And a small percentage is going to help us also try and honor Anyo to get this story and this short film on our road to the Oscars and things like that.
Yeah. Well, we wish you all the best. I mean, you know, you're represented by Catherine, and she's many of her clients have gotten as far as the Oscars, and you're in good hands. You know, I always tell the people that. Yeah. No, you're in good hands. She knows what she's doing. So the URL is kind of hard to remember, but I guess if they look for Lukey and the Lights, they'll find that website, right?
Yeah. I think
that's, you know, a lot easier to find.
Yeah, exactly. And you can look at Lukey and the Lights on Instagram, and all of that is connected back to Global Neuro White Care as well.
Okay.
And even if you look up Big Grin Productions, BIGGRIN, Big Grin, you know, like the smile productions, all of our stuff is tagged with Global Neuro White Care as well. So you'll be able to easily find it.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay, very cool. Well, everybody, check it out. Fascinating interview. And, you know, I salute you for all this. You know, I mean, you've devoted a lot of time, effort, and, you know, to this cause. And I think it's important, you know, that people find out about it, because, like, I didn't know anything about it. You know, I don't think about it, but it's there, and people suffer, mm-hmm. and they go through this, and they need support, I guess, you know. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
It's another resource, another way for people to kind of help come to terms with what the heck is going on. And
right.
Before that, there was, you know, there wasn't anything like this ever done before. So this is the very first time a character in animation depicts
right.
this disease. And it's got a very special story, even though it's a little bit sad.
Right.
A lot of it is inspired and influenced by Anyo. And he actually voices one of the characters in the film.
There's really?
The big yellow robot named Theo. So he's uh-huh. the voice of that character.
I see.
Yeah.
So there's actually some dialogue there too?
Yeah, a little bit. So we ended up inventing a robot language.
Oh, okay.
That is kind of this mixture of Spanish, English, and Dutch.
Okay.
And then with my great sound designer, Andrew Vernon, he kind of manipulated it to make it sound a little bit more like robot speak.
Right.
Yeah. So we have that way it could, like Anya wished for, it could play anywhere around the world.
Right. You don't need to know the language.
Exactly.
And it's quite a feat to convey emotion without dialogue, you know, and especially in animation too,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
And you managed to do that, you know, your legacy is, you know, getting to be a Pixar one day, you know.
Yeah. I used to want to go to Pixar. Now I want to create the next Pixar,
yeah.
which is just, I want Big Grin to grow, and I want to work on projects that, you know, my employees and team members actually care about, and we're making
right.
a difference in the world that way.
Yeah. Sounds good. So, Toby Cochran, where can people find you if they want to?
Yeah. You can go to Instagram and just type in my name, Toby Cochran, TobyCochran, and you'll find Big Grin, Lukey, and the Light stuff all from that. But mm-hmm. all of my socials are just my first and last name.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Toby, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You're very inspiring, very talented, very interesting man.
Thank
you. And... And we like that on the show.
That's
you know?
Good.
It helps it when it's interesting.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, I wish you all the best. Continued success to you.
Thank you so much.
And congratulations on the baby. You
Thank
said
you.
You just had a baby.
Yeah, 3 months. Yeah, shout out to Mateo.
Awesome.
And my wife.
And to your wife.
Down.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Awesome. And so how long have you been in L.A. now?
A little over 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
And the first year and a half, I was just finishing the film. So I just have started going out and exploring, so I still don't know where, like, the best places to go hiking are or
right.
some of the best restaurants are. So.
Yeah, but you will.
Yeah.
You will. Awesome. Everybody, thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.